How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is May 15th, 2012, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Got a lot of stuff to talk about today, including Dave, center of controversy today in the MMA world.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. What have you done?
I didn't do anything. I wrote a story a week ago on the ratings.
That's right.
Which we talked about, you know, even before that here.
Yeah, apparently Dana took exception to your gloom and doom article.
Yeah, he didn't read the whole article, but yeah.
Now, did he? Was he alerted to the article on Twitter or something, or what happened?
No, I'm not sure. I didn't really discuss, like, you know, where he saw. I mean, there's a lot of people in that company who read the Observer, so you know, someone showed it to him, and from talking to him, I mean, he and I don't want to go into too much detail on this because it doesn't serve any purpose, but you can read the article, but there were points that he made, you know, in the article, you know, or about the article that I actually wrote, you know. I mean, like, you do realize that we had the Avengers, and it's like, yeah, I wrote that, you know, and Cinco de Mayo, and it's like, Cinco de Mayo, I don't really think that was as big of a deal because, let's face it, you know, the Floyd Mayweather fight did awfully good. It was actually the second biggest, the biggest pay-per-view for anyone, perhaps not including UFC 100, depending on, you know, where it winds up, but it's going to be right with UFC 100, maybe a little above or a little below. But for boxing, it was the biggest one in 5 years since the De La Hoya fight, which, and Cinco de Mayo has been a big night for boxing for years. And, you know, Fox put the show on Cinco de Mayo for that very reason, because they thought that it would, you know, it would be a great night. And it wasn't. But, I mean, the Avengers is legit to a degree for some of the drop. There's no question. It was one of the biggest opens. I guess it was the biggest open of all time. But, you know, that was, you know, I wrote that. And, but I think that, he said that I said that UFC can't make it as a network property, and I said that I didn't say it couldn't make it. I said that the jury is out if it can, and it's not the end of the world if it doesn't. They had many great years on Spike, and they will have many great years, or at least good years, perhaps, whether or not that they remain on Fox. And then, you know, either they'll remain on Fox or they won't, or they'll remain on Fox the way WWE remains on NBC, which is like they're on, but they're not promoted very heavily. And, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, the next one is very, I think the next one's very, very important, the August show, because if the rating is in the same ballpark, you know, no matter what anyone says, Fox is going to, you know, Fox didn't, that's the thing. Fox didn't promote this that well. And that's not my fault, and it's not his fault. But, you know, for all the talk about Fox, I mean, that's the reality, is you compare the promotion of the first show and even the second show with the third show, and it's way, way down, and the rating was way, way down. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, that was their decision-making, and, you know, that's what happened.
Well, you can go up to, I guess, Dana's video blog if you want to see his comments on Dave, or you can read the article in the Observer, preferably do both. And I guess we'll see where this goes. It was nice of him to call you before the promo.
Yeah,
he did warn you.
He did call me. He said he didn't want to blindside me. And so I that was, I don't know what it was. I
mean, it's a very, very nice attack.
Yeah, I mean, I've been blindsided by other people for so long that I was kind of taken aback by it. I mean, I don't really know what else to say about it. I'll know a lot. I think I'll know a lot more, you know, maybe not tomorrow, but Wednesday. I'll probably actually have a lot more to say on Wednesday once I figure out what's going on from here. So so there you go.
Well, speaking of Wednesday, at some point on the show, we'll talk about the UFC on Fuel card tomorrow. Tomorrow meaning Tuesday.
Yeah.
UFC on Fuel on Tuesday. Dustin Poirier and the Korean Zombie is the main event. And it's not looking good because it's on Fuel, obviously, but I, even though I don't have Fuel, I was, hate to use the word blindsided, but blindsided by the fact the show's on Tuesday, Because traditionally, these UFC fuel events and such, they run a Wednesday, or they'll do an FX on Friday. Tuesday is an odd day, and well,
they're going to run on all kinds of different days. I mean, they're running, the next one on fuel, I think it's July 11th, and I think that's a Wednesday, and it's here in San Jose, too. Yeah, the fuel, it's just different days. And, you know, they did when the Jake Ellenberger one, I think that was a Wednesday night, wasn't it? Jake Ellenberger and David.
I think they've done a lot of Wednesdays and a lot of Fridays and pay-per-views on Saturdays.
Yeah, well, FX is Friday nights almost exclusively. I mean, that's the idea. And then fuel is just, I don't know how they choose, you know, what night fuel is. Maybe they're just, this is all experimental and seeing, you know, like which night of the week it works the best. You know, it's not like when it comes to fuel, it's not like there's anything else on fuel that's going to get ratings half as big as this. So they can, you know, it's the whole idea of them on fuel is to build for the future. It's not for the present anyway. So, maybe it's just a thing where they're going to try a whole bunch of different days, and then they'll kind of like look over and go, oh, what's the best day for a fight? But I do think in the long run, at some point, they really need to, you know, have a consistent day on fuel as well. Because I think one of the things that we've really learned, you know, whether it's wrestling or MMA or anyone, that when, you know, you put a show on an unfamiliar day, it usually doesn't do very well.
Well, I mean, I don't want anyone to get mad about this, but I think this Tuesday is a stupid idea. I think that it's proven by, and this is just me, but I think the ratings bear it out quite a bit as well. When the Countdown specials aired after Raw, I watched every goddamn single one without exception. And as soon as they started airing on weird days and weird times, I was out of the habit and I stopped watching them. I caught one here or there, but people are creatures of habit.
More and more now,
especially with television.
Yeah, more now and more now than I think ever before in history.
Yeah, you can't move a Countdown special to Thursday at 6 p.m., for example, and expect people to watch it. They watch it when they watch it, and when you change it, and we saw it with the ratings, they plummeted.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the one thing with the primetime shows is they are consistent in the sense that they are all 11 p.m. on Friday right after Ultimate Fighter. So they are making that, you know, they are making that, and they're doing a lot more of them. You know, they did this one with when they do Sonnen and Silva, which hasn't been announced, but I can't imagine them not doing it. That would be like the fourth one of the year because they did Diaz and Condit, they did Evans and John Jones. This one with Frank Mir and Junior Dos Santos, which started on Friday night. So they are doing that. You know, FX is doing. FX is making Friday night the night. You know, unfortunately, Friday night is probably the worst night for the demo that watches UFC because they're out more, and I know, and the ratings of Ultimate Fighter pretty much show that.
Yeah, I mean it is consistent, but it's still new. So we're talking it's going to be a long time before people get in the habit of and what's going to happen when there is no Ultimate Fighter on Friday? I mean, they're just going to. I mean, I presume it's the same time and everything like that, and I suppose it's not going to make much of a difference, but...
Well, it'll make a difference in the sense that it won't have the built-in lead-in of at least this is a lead-in of 900,000 UFC fans that are watching, and then they, you know, retained... They did 540 for the Mir fight, so they retained, you know, a little over half of them.
Isn't that kind of distressing in a way, though?
That they only retained half?
Yeah.
I
mean, you got to be pretty hardcore watching.
No, I mean, here's the thing. I can't say that because it's not. I wouldn't call it distressing because I don't think. Let's think about this.
You got hardcore UFC fans, the hardest of the hardcore
I'm trying to think that when they would follow on Spike with this stuff, how many they retain?
Yeah, but they were following Impact. They were following pro wrestling with an MMA
show. No. They did these shows after Ultimate Fighter.
I see.
Some at times when they did the Wednesday night Ultimate Fighter, and they would follow with the prime times. Let me think about this.
I think they were retaining a lot more than 500,000 viewers.
The prime times were doing a little bit better, but they were. I think I would have to actually look this up. I don't know off the top of my head. I think the percentage of the viewers, like, yeah, they were doing more than 500,000 viewers, but they were being let in with more than 900,000. They were being let in with 1.5 million. So were they averaging, say, 800? I mean, the Rashad Evans and Rampage and the Brock and Frank Mir, yeah. I mean, those, and I think the Brock and Frank Mir was actually in the summer. I don't think the season was even going on. So that didn't, you know, and Rashad is, was, that was May. So that would have been after the Ultimate Fighter, I believe. So those did better. But most of the ones did, you know, I think on a percentage of retaining the audience, it may not have been that much different. It's just that the lead-in is less. The night is worse being Friday. You know, Friday at 11, it's not the that's not the perfect time either. So, and the thing is that the Evans and Jones fight, you know, still did very well on pay-per-view. And the Diaz and Conda did, I mean, it did better than I thought it would do. I wouldn't say it did great or anything. I mean, but it beat, you know, you had Condit with Diaz instead of BJ Penn with Diaz, and the Condit, a much worse draw, outdrew it, and I got to attribute that to the prime times, which were very good shows. I think the key is if you have a really good show, even if it's 500,000 viewers, you know, you'll connect, and if it's a lousy show, you could have 1 million viewers, and it's not going to connect. So I think it's the quality of the show is important. Of course, you always want more viewers. But no, I mean what you're saying as far as like Tuesday and you know, I mean, you know, that it's going to be a tough day and it's fuel and a lot of people aren't going to get to see it and it's, you know, not a lot of big names. I looked at the card and I think the TV card it's probably going to be good action. It's a lot of small guys on this card, which usually means a lot of action, but it also you know, without any big names, it's harder to sell. I mean, Dustin Poirier, who actually is a very good fighter, is still really not a big name. And the Korean Zombie, I think, has a little bit of a name. And at the weigh-ins, he actually seemed to be the most popular guy at the weigh-ins, which I guess is from those two fights with Garcia and the quick knockout of Hominick. So, you know, and both of these guys are, you know, the winner certainly could be in line for a featherweight title shot. You know, Poirier is ready already. I actually think that Poirier should have gotten the shot ahead of Eric Koch, but he didn't want it, number one. And number two, they already had this match booked.
Let's talk about Raw. This was the go-home show for...
It was a weird show. I got a lot of negative letters when this show was over.
Well, John Cena is infuriating. I know why they did it.
Yeah, I know they did it because they were combating the divorce news.
Had to be happy-go-lucky John Cena tonight, and all I could think was, please to God, get this divorce over with quickly so we can get away from this.
Yeah. You know what? One thing I do want to say, I really like John Laurinaitis, and I really like the writing of John Laurinaitis. I mean, they made him into a really big-time heel. The one thing that, and I'm actually kind of curious about this, when the show was over, and I mean, you know, I got plenty of texts and emails when this was over, and it was the same thing that I came to, is like, Big Show is going to come down, and he's going to, you know, he's going to tease he's going after Laurinaitis, and then he's going to destroy John Cena, and Laurinaitis is going to beat John Cena. I think that everyone watching the show came to that. And if this was wrestling of 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that's exactly what they would do.
Sure.
And they may very well be doing it. I don't know, but I think that... I know, that's what I was thinking. Is that because everyone's going to come to that conclusion, they're sitting there going like, well, gee, if we book this like this, everyone's going to come to this conclusion, so we're going to do the opposite. I don't know what the opposite is, because I really don't think that...
I don't think
they're firing John Laurinaitis, which was the added stip that if he doesn't win, he's fired.
And well, the next No Way Out, they're billing it as John Cena, John Laurinaitis. Laurinaitis is going to have No Way Out, so I presume it's going to be a cage match after somebody runs in and screws Cena here. And it has to be someone who's not a WWE superstar. So if they everyone figures out Big Show, then they'll have to get somebody that's not on the roster currently.
Karma.
Could be. I don't know. All I know is that when I watched the John Laurinaitis Big Show thing, where Big Show was utterly humiliated and then fired, I thought, you know, I actually thought that segment was awesome. And
Big Show was tremendous.
That's the
whole
thing.
And John was tremendous, too.
But the whole thing is, if this were anybody else other than Big Show, I mean, I just watched it and I was like, these fans, when Big Show teased getting on his knee, these fans were absolutely, They were so hot for this segment. The idea that Big Show was going to... They were so pissed off at this idea. They were so angry. And I was just thinking, here's... And then he got fired and there's all these boos. And it's just like, it's 2012 and these people are into a storyline where a guy got fired. You know what I mean? In 2012, nobody could have gotten the people into this like John Laurinaitis and the Big Show.
I don't think they bought the firing. I think that they just were...
They got into it.
No, they got into it because the guy was out there crying and because, yeah, it was...
They were both awesome in their role.
Yeah, they had two good performances and they got into it. That's what happens when you do something good.
What other babyface could have done this like the Big Show? I can't think of anybody.
What babyface is really loved that could have pulled this one off?
No, but I don't think there's anybody on the roster that could have pulled this off like the Big Show. He was the perfect person to do this with.
Yeah. You may be right on that one. I'd have to go think through. Well, first, they couldn't do it to Randy Orton, and John Cena, they hate any, you know, half the people hate anyway.
And John Cena would have made, everyone else would have laughed through this whole thing.
John Cena wouldn't have cried. John Cena would have just been, we already did the firing thing with John Cena.
Everybody would have tried to be too cool.
Yeah. The one thing that I'm really curious is because that segment was, I think that segment, just the way that it was done, well, I mean, we'll see. I think that it probably did a really good quarter because I was just thinking, watching that thing, I mean, you know, and they dragged it out and dragged it out.
You couldn't tear yourself away from it.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, no one's going to turn the TV set off during this segment.
No.
I think that they may have... I was so curious when that thing was over about, like, you know, that aspect of it, because they were really dragging it out for as long as they could. I mean, that's the thing on the show tonight is that they had the first segment, that segment, and the last segment. They dragged them out. They were, like, really long.
Yeah.
The first two were good, and then the third one... The third one just at the end, which was the Cena Laurinaitis thing.
Hateful.
That one was the one where it did feel like it was just too long. I mean, I was just like, oh, God, you know. I mean, even when Eve comes in and they do the reveal at the end of the new stips, which were no DQ, no count out, and no interference. If anyone interferes, they're immediately terminated. No one can help John Laurinaitis. It's a one-on-one match. And, what's the other, if Laurinaitis doesn't win, he's fired.
Now, I don't want to think too hard about this because it's always a bad idea, but so let's say that the idea they have is that the Big Show has been fired and to get his job back, he comes in and he helps John Laurinaitis and John Laurinaitis is so grateful that he gives him his job back. Wouldn't the board of directors just say, well, now Big Show, you're fired?
No, probably not.
But I mean,
I know what you're saying.
Shouldn't they is my question. Not will they, shouldn't they?
Okay, we're going to judge it like a real sport, yeah.
And furthermore.
You know, here's the thing, though. Brian, you know that what you may be missing is that when they come back and do that this week and come back on Raw, there's two ways they could play it. Number one is the sympathy on Big Show where he had to do it to get his job back. The other could be that this entire thing from start to finish was a complete work that Big Show and John Laurinaitis had pulled on us and from the beginning. And I wouldn't, if that's what they're doing, where they just go, you know, you fans were so stupid, you were like sad to see him go, and we'd plotted this whole thing, and John Cena was so stupid, the board of directors were so stupid, you know, something like that. I mean, they could do that. In fact, I think that that's actually preferable to the idea that, you know, Show is being held against his will, because that way Show can be a full-fledged, all-out heel. The other way, he's kind of a sympathetic, you know, you're pissed at him, but you still have sympathy for him. And to me, I would rather, at this stage of the game, given what they've done to him, I think that he should just go back to being a heel for a while.
And furthermore, let's say that that Big Show interferes, either of these scenarios, and John Cena is beaten. Wasn't the storyline a couple of weeks back that John Laurinaitis was about to be removed from power by the board of directors, but John Cena came forward and said, don't fire him until after the pay-per-view?
Right, so he should be fired after the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Either way, right?
I think so.
Win or lose.
I think win or lose, dude's gone.
Yeah, you would think so, considering how he's treated everybody.
Not what they're going to do, though.
Well, that's the.
We'll see what they do. Let's wait and see. My favorite line.
So you heard that it's going to be Cena Laurinaitis at No Way Out in a cage match?
I just know that they're the No Way Out advertising is suggesting that Laurinaitis and Cena. I forget what the exact word. Someone emailed it to me, but it was they were playing up something like John Laurinaitis will have no way out. So I presume
that would be, you know, I mean, they were going to, you know,
this means nothing, by the way.
Yeah. It could be anyone, you know, it could be any one of a number of situations.
Well, I'm just saying they could change this.
That would make sense, though, is you know, all of that happening. But again, when, you know, there's so much that if they think people have figured it out, they're going to change their plans anyway.
Yeah.
So I hate to, like, even, like, before, you know, I would, this is normally it, exactly what I would speculate on. And now it's like, I don't even like speculating on it, because it's like, if I get it right, you know, they're going to go, okay, we're going to go in there and we're going to redo this whole show. And it's like, okay. And again, that hurts your long-time long-term storylines. But, you know, that's not their concern right now. Their concern right now is to be unpredictable.
Then why book? Why not just flip a fucking coin?
Sometimes it feels that.
Why would you write a storyline that is designed to make sense? And if people figured out because it makes fucking sense, you decide to change it. Why not just flip a coin? Maybe you'd have as good luck as UFC if you just flipped a damn coin.
Hey, you're asking the wrong person, because I'm perplexed by the whole thing. I mean, to me, you know, I mean, hey, let's face it. Once RVD in his last match in WWF, in a stretcher match with Randy Orton, won the match, you know, all bets are off. You know what I mean? It's like the guy in his last match, and granted, like, you know, he still got laid out after winning, but it's like he beat Randy Orton, one of their top stars, in the last match of his contract when he was leaving, because everybody knew that Randy Orton was going to win that match. And just, I mean, and it served no purpose, and Randy Orton was the guy staying, and Randy Orton was the guy who was going to headline, and that's just how it is now. And you just have to accept that that's how it is, and that the storyline that makes the most sense is probably the one that they're going, like, we're going to...
Then why write a story if you're going to change it if people figure out what makes sense? I mean,
I have no earthly idea.
I don't get that, like, at all. I mean, no one could explain this to me logically. I don't get it.
No, it's just what wrestling's reverted to. And when this show was over and I was coming up with that, you know, the same as everybody else, with that Big Show storyline, I mean, my thing was, like, you know, this is really well-written stuff. I mean, if they had done this angle 10 years ago, 15 years ago, exactly like this was, and ending exactly like everyone thinks it's going to be, when it's over, everyone's going to go, you know, and yeah, they're going to be pissed off about, you know, that the heel goes over and everything like that. But, you know, it leads to the cage match and everything like that. And in the long run, it's a very good storyline. Now, if they do something completely different, it's like, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it'll be better. Maybe it'll be worse. I don't know.
Maybe in the cage match, since Big Show interfered, since he's too fat to put in a shark cage, they could put Big Show in the big cage and have Laurinaitis and Cena in the shark cage above the ring. It's a swerve.
That happened once, too, and it wasn't pretty.
I seem to...
The shark cage match in Detroit was freaking brutal.
So anyway, the show opened up with Triple H coming out and addressing Big Show, or Brock Lesnar, with his arm in that special device. And he cut a promo, and long story short, he tried to get Brock back by calling him a quitter. I think that's what he was trying to do. But
quit on everything.
Quit on everything. Quit on UFC.
He didn't say quit on football, which he actually did too.
He didn't say that.
He didn't say quit on amateur wrestling, where you could make the... I mean, he didn't, but I mean, you could make the argument that, you know, again, he won the end. You know, if you want to do a theme of Brock's life, I mean, it's like, it's right there, you know, in every situation. It's like, you know, he, you know, I mean, it was really interesting. It was also interesting that when Triple H was going through the stuff, when he talked about the UFC, it got a bigger reaction than when he talked about him leaving the WWE. You know, even though it was the same basic story that, you know, the going got tough and he quit. And the other thing I thought was that the crowd was, like, really not that into this long speech. I mean, they were much quieter than I expected, especially when he had... you know, I mean, he has that very good delivery and you know, very detailed writing of everything that they did.
So out came Heyman, and long story short, he said that Lesnar had a contract, WWE had breached it, and thus he was serving Triple H with a lawsuit for all the money that was owed. Brock Lesnar as a result of his verbal contract with John Laurinaitis, which was witnessed by millions of people.
And them reneging on the contract. Yeah, but it's interesting.
Well, presumably he's got a good lawyer. So Triple H roughed Heyman up a little bit, said that Lesnar was getting everything he deserved, and as he left, Heyman said, "You know what? You can't touch me. That's assault." And I guess there's going to be lawyers coming after you as well, Triple H. So
he got served. Heyman came out with a lawyer, and yeah,
that's right.
So, I thought this first segment was very good. Heyman was excellent.
He has been great 2 weeks now in a row. So
yeah.
two for two.
Yeah.
It's I wonder if they're playing off like a. I'm trying to think like the last UFC legal entanglement that actually led to a guy kind of being a bigger star. Was there anything like that? Is that what this is built off of?
I don't think so. Hmm. I presumed that the legal stuff was because in real life in the court case, you know, Lesnar pretty much prevailed over WWE. So they're going to do this court case where Lesnar doesn't prevail and he has to come back.
Hmm.
That's how I was. I mean, I even thought that last week before they went into all this legal stuff this week.
We had Punk and Santino against Cody and Daniel Bryan. And CM Punk ended up pinning Cody at the finish. And Daniel Bryan walked out on Cody. So that somehow set up CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan at the pay-per-view on Sunday. And it allowed Cody Rhodes to do yet another job on television. And
Did they even talk about him being champion?
I mean, I presume they did because him and Santino were both in there as champions, but
that wasn't. I mean, I'm sure it was mentioned, but it wasn't. I don't know. I just thought that it was like, yeah. I just thought that like Cody was really. I don't know. This. I tell you what. This is quite the title reign for Cody.
Oh yeah, he's up there with Jack Swagger. You know, the one thing about this match that was awesome was as Santino's getting pummeled, he finally dives for the hot tag
that
baby faces have done for a million years, and he missed.
That was really good.
That was awesome.
But I mean, it was done. The thing is, it was done as such a comedy spot, as opposed to being done as something different. Which I guess maybe you couldn't even do. The only guy
you
could probably have gotten
away with. He's the only guy you could have done this with.
Yeah, you know the other guy was, but it's not in this promotion, is Eric Young. They're about the only ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
We had Beth Phoenix beating Alicia Fox, and Layla made the save afterwards. So it is Layla versus Beth. Beth is healed now, they said. So she's getting her title shot at the...
Yeah, not even... You know, a lot of guys are healed now. A lot of people are healed.
Except Mark Henry.
Yeah, you know what? I'm trying to find out. I'm sure I'll know by the morning what the injury is. But as of this moment, I actually do not know what the injury is. It was speculated. I did when I asked. It was speculated to me that it was a surgery for the groin injury.
Mm.
That was the last injury that I remember him having. I mean, I think he had stuff with didn't he have a second injury with a groin injury? When he was out, maybe a knee or something?
I
think it was a knee.
I think he hurt his groin, and then he was trying to compensate for it and hurt his leg.
Yeah, so it could be one or the other. But he said that if he cannot come fully back from this, he will retire. And, you know, there's been talk...
For a long time.
Yeah, but a little bit before WrestleMania that Henry could be retiring right about now. I mean, he's had a long run.
He was talking about long before that. He'd made the comment that if he hadn't won the world title, he was going to retire.
That's true. Actually, several years ago. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
We had Kane beating Big Show after Laurinaitis distracted him, and then they did the whole angle where Laurinaitis demanded that he apologize, and then after he apologized, he wanted him on his knees, and Show played it up for all he was worth and talked about how much he loved wrestling and he'd be fine without it, but goddamn, he loved coming to the building and making the children smile, and the fans so badly did not want this man to get on his knees and beg, and he finally basically begged Laurinaitis not to make him beg, and Laurinaitis said, "I'll reconsider," and of course, when he got to the top of the ramp, he was about to fire Show, and so Show got on his knees and begged and cried and begged for his job, and Laurinaitis fired him anyway. And Show just sat there and wept, and the fans chanted his name. And I did not do this segment justice. These guys did a fabulous job. And like I said, nobody but the Big Show could have pulled this off.
You may be right, but I thought it was great.
We had Kofi, Truth, and Brodus Clay against Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, and Miz, with a bunch of guys, Abraham Washington, Mason Ryan, Primo, Epico, all watching from the skybox. There was a spot there near the end with Kofi and Miz that fell apart in a monumental manner. And then everybody else got in the ring, and it got pretty sloppy. And finally, we had Clay pinning Miz with the big splash. All the kids got in the ring. They danced. It was a segment.
I wonder what they're going to do, because I'm guessing, you know, Miz is doing the movie in June, so I'm guessing that he's going to be off TV for a while. So I hope that they have a good idea on how to bring Miz back with some, you know, some form of something new to where he can, you know.
He'll be a Marine.
I don't know if that's it.
They'll say he went to boot camp. He'll come back with a crew cut and try and make him tough again.
Yeah.
I think they should really send him to boot camp. That'd probably help a lot, to be honest.
Yeah.
We had AJ.
Well, you know, they could I don't know. They could bring back Slaughter and have him be his mentor, but actually I think that would never work now.
We had AJ and CM Punk backstage, and she wanted to wish him luck, and he politely yet sternly blew her off, and she looked very sad.
Yeah. She's gonna snap.
Yeah, I don't know who she's gonna turn on Sunday.
Yeah.
Maybe both of them. No.
Yeah, maybe.
We had Jericho beating Orton via DQ. Sheamus was out there, and they did the spot where let's see, somebody threw somebody into I think it was Orton got thrown into Sheamus. And then Orton was outside the ring, and Sheamus attacked Jericho for the DQ. And Orton was all pissed off, so he attacked Sheamus. And this led to them announcing Orton versus Sheamus on SmackDown. And Alberto Del Rio is going to get the shot at Sheamus at the pay-per-view, even though he wasn't on TV. So
He's in Japan.
He's in Japan, huh?
Well, he's on his way back. He's supposed to be at TV tomorrow.
Hmm. So that's...
Well, it's a four-way at the pay-per-view.
I was just laughing because I was like, I was watching Sheamus and Orton go at it, and I was like, I'd pay for that match. And then they announced, that one's free, and Sheamus and Alberto is coming up on Sunday.
No, it's a four-way.
Oh, that's right, it is.
It's Sheamus, Alberto,
that's
Orton,
right,
and Jericho.
They changed it. How
yeah,
about
they changed
that?
Last week.
I forgot about that.
Yes.
Eh, it's for the better. Then we had Laurinaitis come out, and as noted, John Cena needed to be jolly this evening because, you know, these divorces, these things don't bother this man. Everything rolls off his back. Water off his back. So he came out, and he was the absolute most annoying person since the heyday of Mr. Anderson. Just being a four-year-old, and I was like, kind of, I don't know.
He just kept calling him a loser. Loser. Loser.
It was funny, though, is like, I was infuriated, but the crowd loved it. So, I don't know. I guess I'm not their target audience these days.
Yeah.
So finally,
they're going to love it on that corny way. But I mean, and I actually thought that it was kind of clever, but it just went on too long. I mean, that was my qualm with it. I actually was liking the segment, and then it just kept going and going and.
I did not like it.
Yeah.
We had the clever comedy of there's a Pittsburgh Penguins reference, and Cena took out a hockey puck and told Laurinaitis to go puck himself. And everyone, ha, ha, ha. That's 2012 Raw, everybody. And then Laurinaitis said...
I didn't have a problem with that. You know, it built to the spot. And,
yeah,
you know,
I guess.
So it's a cute pun.
Sure.
You know, didn't bother me too much.
Eve finally came out and they made the announcement. Only way to win, pinfall or submission. Anybody interferes will be immediately terminated. If Laurinaitis loses, he's terminated. And Laurinaitis ended up slapping Cena and walking out, and Cena had a stern look as the show went off the air. That was a ruling, by the way, by the board of directors, not Eve. And that's how the show ended. So they should have, I don't know. The go-home segment actually had, like, I mean, John Laurinaitis had real legit heat during that segment. And here with John Cena just being a four-year-old, it was just kind of like, eh, it's stupid wrestling angle. So I think that's kind of, I don't know. When this was over, I had no more interest in the pay-per-view match. And I don't know if I had, like, a lot more interest during the Laurinaitis segment, but at least when I watched it, I was like, you know, these people are going to be hot to see John Laurinaitis killed on Sunday.
They still are, though. They still are.
I
actually thought that, you know, given it's a three-week build and given that it's Cena and Laurinaitis, I think that they've done a pretty good – they've done about as good a job as you're going to do with this one. I mean, is it going to do well? Maybe it's – I don't know. I mean, you know, you're following Cena and Brock Lesnar and Cena and Rock, and I mean, I was amused when, you know, Laurinaitis was trying to explain to everyone that in fact he's a much bigger star than either The Rock or Brock Lesnar, but it, you know, it is a big drop from there, and you know, whatever they get, I mean, it's something that they probably should just be happy with. I don't think that it's, you know, I mean, they're coming off of two pay per views, you know, the one we know did very well, and then I would presume again that the last one did very, very well also. So, you know, and I think people know also that, let's face it, the big angle is Lesnar and Triple H, and, you know, considering, you know, this is good because this is legitimate long term build. I mean, like, you know, they're not doing it this month, and I doubt that they're going to do it in June, although I know it's possible that they will. I mean, they're probably going to wait till August. And they're keeping it alive a little bit every week. So, I mean, I like that.
Diaz had his day in court today, which he wasn't there for, although he wasn't scheduled to be. It wasn't another no-show. But it was ruled that, in fact, his suspension was not, liquidated, whatever you want to call it. He goes to court next Monday.
Well, you know, he goes before the commission next Monday. What happened was both sides are claiming victory in this one. Diaz's side is saying that we're getting our hearing, which is all we wanted, and the commission is saying that they, you know, that they weren't happy that they were forced to do the hearing next week and that they were told that they had violated their own laws by not giving him, or their own ruling by not giving him a hearing in 45 days. But they said that, in fact, it was a win because they were not overruled and the court gave them the jurisdiction to make whatever decision they want on the Diaz case. I think that, you know, the thing is, and this is, you know, obviously what the Nevada Commission was arguing, was they were saying, like, hey, produce the medical marijuana card, and we'll give you the hearing. And the reason that they didn't do the hearing was because they were waiting for the card, and the card never came. And that's why the 45 days went over. But the court decided that, you know, yeah, that all well and good, but you still should have done it within the 45 days. So, you know, he's getting the hearing. I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, Monday we'll find out. We'll find out if he gets a year or 9 months or 6 months. The shorter the better. One thing I know is that if he gets 6 months, boy, they're going to want him on one of these cards as quick as possible. And against, probably against Condit too.
Yeah.
Because I mean, they'll UFC will do everything, I think, to force that match, because if they can get, you know, GSP and Diaz in November for Montreal, I mean, that's a big one, and they know it, and that's the one they want to get.
The ROH situation, not really anything new. We've posted all the press releases and such on the front page. People that order it are going to get the Best in the World pay-per-view, iPay-per-view for free, as well as this one available to them for a year. They have vowed that everything will be fixed by the June show, and anything new that I didn't add right there?
No, it's pretty much. I mean, now, I think a lot of people have seen that Gabe Sapolsky was really, really mad. And I mean, and I can understand this, and I'll tell you why. Because I do believe that that a lot of people, I don't know that how many of them were going to order, like, you know, Dragon Gate or Evolve, but I do believe that, let's just say that there's 2,000 let's just go with the number. I mean, you know, maybe it's a little more, maybe it's a little less, but there's 2,000 people who, you know, Saturday night would have ordered this iPay-per-view thing. Some of them are just going to be so furious and just say, this is Mickey Mouse, and they'll paint everyone with that same brush. that this is just this iPay-per-view stuff is just Mickey Mouse, and it's not. You can't count on it, and there's too many problems, and they're too frequent, and then you know you're the smaller guy, and you can be hurt because let's face it, those guys, every one of these small promotions that's on iPay-per-view, they're counting on this thing to slowly grow and get bigger and bigger to where they can make a little bit of money. You know, let's say independent wrestling, you don't have to make a ton of money to break even and do okay. So if you can make, $15,000 extra dollars on an iPay-per-view, just as a number I'm throwing out there, I mean, that's significant as hell. And to do that, let's see, if you're doing it on your own, a thousand isn't that many people. Especially down the line when the feeling is that you hook it up to the TV set and you're not scared of doing it and it's a live show. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Well, it was long ago, but Ring of Honor was doing 10,000 on real pay per view for tape shows. Obviously, that they weren't doing that after a while, and they've never come. I think their big number, the biggest number they've ever done, which was for the December show this last year, I think was 2,300. So is that the ceiling? I don't know. I mean, the feeling is that this is something that can grow as more and more people aren't scared of it. But, if you have three straight misfires like Ring of Honor had, I mean, people are going to be scared of it for a long time and just say, like, hey, it's not worth
Essentially, their failure reflects poorly on everybody who does iPay-per-views. That's his concern.
Absolutely, and I would think that to a degree there's something there. Even if your stuff is good, it's the same thing. Like I think that there is something to that. I mean, and even if there's not, I mean, I think that's why he was really upset. And I know, everyone in Ring of Honor was really upset, but. How that happened, I mean, it's so hard, how does this happen? How is it not tested? And I mean, it wasn't even just, that, it was the Wednesday thing as well, and the one thing is it was a server issue. I think we had pretty much talked about that we thought it was, and that is what it was. It was a server issue with the server that Sinclair uses, and, what does that say? I mean, man, Sinclair, they own all these TV. This is the craziest thing. They own all these TV stations. They're using this as a property. I mean, like when TBS, TBS was one station, and granted, it was a national station. But this is like, stations, it's CW stations, and there's some network affiliates all over these, medium market cities. And they can't even, have top-rate production for their television show. And their website goes down when, I mean, how many people, we're talking about what, at most, logged in all at once. What are we talking about? 1,000 logged in all, 1,500? I mean, granted, we've had problems with the website and stuff, too. I mean, it does happen and everything, but, you would think that, a website of a company run by, a television station, network would be, better than that. And it's not. And it's, again, the other ones, I mean, it actually is, in a sense, it's a series of bad luck. I mean, let's face it, the first Go Fight Live one on that first night was, whatever the reason was, I'd never seen one. It was like probably a one-time thing. The next night, as you pointed out from being there, I mean, that mess up was completely out of control. There was a brownout. That's nobody's fault, at all. That's not Go Fight Live's fault. It just came at a bad day for Go Fight Live, and Ring of Honor felt they needed to leave Go Fight Live just for their own fan base and just to, show how their displeasure for what happened. And then they go to their own, and they had, really even a bigger problem, they had a bigger problem. So they better... I said that before this one, they better get this one working, and it was a disaster. So they really better get the next one working, and I don't know, but this one, this is one where, it's going to cost them. I mean, again, how long? Is it a death knell? I mean, I don't really want to make a prediction on how bad it's going to cost them, but it's going to cost them on the next show. There's no question the next show number is going to be significantly lower than it would have been. Will they, you know, will a year, will everyone forgive him, and will it all be fine if they keep getting good ones? Probably. But, yeah, you know, some people may just go, screw it. I'm not going to waste my time with this.
Let's do the impact spoilers here very quickly. Bobby Roode's going to have a celebration if he becomes the longest reigning TNA world champion, which he will next week, unless I guess he's got to defend the title next week on Open Fight Night, so he could conceivably lose.
Yeah, but they would already. I don't think he can, because they will, because he's already considered the longest, because they count it to when the TV show airs, and on that TV show they will be on, not the show that's this week, but the show that's next week on that Thursday, which would be like the 24th, and I think that it's like the 19th where he breaks the record, something like that. So when that show airs and the show starts, he will have already broken the record. But if he loses, it's actually, you know, tomorrow when this is going to happen, or late tonight, depending on when you're listening to this. So I think that he can't lose for that very reason. Aside from the fact that it's not time for him to lose until, you know, for him to lose before James Storm comes in makes no sense at all. I mean, it's again, that's the match that they're, you know, that's the match that they're building now. If it was like WWE, they'd be building this, and everybody go, well, they're building Roode against Storm, so obviously we can't go in that direction.
No, of course not. So there's some matches tonight. Four winners meet next week at a four-way, and the winner will face Roode for the title.
On the same show, so
yeah.
This is all being taped.
Now, shouldn't Open Fight Night, can't everyone just challenge Bobby Roode? Isn't that the deal? You can challenge anybody, and they have to accept?
No, you can... In theory, but the championship match, what happens is that Hulk Hogan chooses a championship, and then throughout the show, he eliminates the different contenders, and then it's that championship match. That's part of the Open Fight Night. I mean, they also have the open challenges, which are like that. Yeah, it's a work in progress and everything. But this Open Fight Night, instead of Hogan eliminating them, they're going to do the match to eliminate, you know, the four leading challengers. In that match, you know, to see who gets the championship shot. So it's Bully Ray, Jeff Hardy,
go through the results here really quick.
Okay, but the thing with Jeff Hardy, the thing is that, like, when I saw Jeff Hardy beating Anderson, it's like, I have no earthly... Can you explain to me, maybe you can, why Anderson won that match at the pay-per-view?
Because it was a screw-up. Maybe Jeff was supposed to win.
No, he wasn't. Anderson was supposed to win.
Then they watched the match and thought, he sucks, let's change the finish.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like, if you were going to do this, let Jeff win. It's like, I don't understand why they have to do even Steven booking. Just give Jeff some momentum. You know, I mean, it's like, God help us that, you know, we have to protect Mr. Anderson above Jeff Hardy, considering the respective popularity of the two guys.
Bully beat RVD. So RVD, coming off the pay-per-view championship match, is a loser. AJ won a battle royal, and then he was going to explain what happened with Dixie. But Daniels and Kazarian showed up with their iPad and had a video of Styles and Dixie going into their hotel room together.
Yeah.
We had,
oh, my God.
That would eliminate Photoshop.
Are they doing a spoof on the Hogan deal?
Maybe they are.
I didn't even think about that until you just mentioned the hotel room. Not that Hogan's was a hotel room, but I just, for some reason, that clicked. And it's like, could it be like that they're going to, I don't know, just figure out a way? I mean...
I don't want to think about this anymore.
I don't know that I want to either.
Gail beat Velvet and Brooke when Velvet had Miss Tessmacher pinned and Kim stole the pin. So presumably Kim and Velvet at the pay-per-view, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it seemed like that was what they were building anyway, and Brooke was just a way to kind of get through like what they would consider like a B pay-per-view, and, you know, the next one, which is the Slammiversary, is like an A pay-per-view, and then you go with the A star, which is Velvet. And, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, even though Brooke's the better worker of the two already, you know, Velvet is the bigger star and the more over of the two women.
Then Jeff beat Anderson, and Kurt beat Samoa Joe, which meant that next week it is Angle, Hardy, Styles, and Bully Ray, with the winner facing Bobby Roode for the title. And also on the show, Mike Knox, the Knox, had a tryout match against D-Von.
Which I wonder how that went.
Lost.
What? Well, but I'm just wondering what they thought of him. Because, I mean, I liked Mike Knox. When he was cut by WWE, I was surprised at the time.
Hmm.
And they weren't doing anything with him. He improved a lot. Because, I mean, I remember Mike Knox. I've seen him wrestle for years. And for a long time, I always thought of him as this guy who, you know, good look, but just not a very good worker. And then all of a sudden, it was like, you know, a completely different look. And he turned into, you know what, I mean, I don't say a really good worker, but, I mean, I thought he had something. Then they didn't really do anything with him. And he's been gone for a long enough time that I don't think that people will see him as a retread guy. I think that they should certainly give him another name. And I would bet that they would if they hire him. I don't know what kind of shape he's in. It's been a long time since we've seen him, and he wasn't working many indies, was he? I mean, I rarely, if ever, saw his name on an indie. So I wonder what he's been doing.
Well, that's not a good sign.
It usually isn't a good sign if you've dropped out, yeah.
All right, we're almost out of time, but a couple of quick questions. What happened to the machine guns?
They're around. They're just not, you know, they're kind of being cycled out right now.
They were on the out cycle, apparently.
Yeah. I was surprised, you know, this weekend that they lost to Gunnar and Hernandez at the house shows, but just because, you know, at the house shows you put the baby faces over most of the time. And again, like, they brought him in, they gave him, you know, this is, you know, and again, they brought him in, they gave him all that fanfare. I was surprised that they beat him as quickly as they did. But you know, again, it was with Joe and Magnus, who are the champions, so that was okay. And then they just didn't do anything with him, and the people were very happy to see him back.
Why did it take WWE so long to cycle out the hard rings from the 80s?
I don't know as far as, you know, it was well into the 90s when they did it. I mean, the hard rings were because they didn't do as many bumps, and it was a lot bigger humans, and they needed the sturdy ring to support the big guys. You know, they had guys like Earthquake and Tugboat and Andre the Giant and a lot of warlords and people like that that were so. That was the mentality of the harder rings. And then when the 90s came and there were a lot more guys that wanted to do a lot more athletic stuff, they built a whole bunch of bump-friendly rings. And I tell you what, I once spoke to Mick Foley about this. And this was, if you remember the period where they had so many guys breaking their neck. And, you know, that's when they started banning a whole bunch of moves. I tell you one thing we should say. I mean, even though, like, you know, Edge did have his career end and things like that, if you remember how many guys were getting that surgery, whatever it was, like, I don't know, like 7-8 years ago. And really, I mean, you know, who was the last guy to get that surgery? It hasn't been anyone in a long time. So what they have done to make it less dangerous, you got to congratulate WWE for that stuff because, you know, they had a problem and they addressed it. And but he had told me that one of the reasons he thought that so many guys, when they were having all those neck injuries, that one of the things that he thought was the reason was because of that bump-friendly ring, that guys mentally thought that they could, you know, can do anything in that ring because it's a much, you know, more bump-friendly ring than the one they were used to. So they did so much more. And if you remember, the work rate of the guys, you know, increased greatly, but a lot of that was also due to the mentality of who they were, you know, using and what they were pushing. I mean, for a long time, you know, WWE never pushed based on, you know, they didn't push small guys and they didn't push guys who did a lot of stuff for the most part. I mean, you know, Shawn and Brett were like the, you know, they were the exceptions. But, you know, come to the, like, the late, you know, 90s, early 10s, and you just had all of these guys that were a lot smaller that had, you know, real strong mentalities of what they wanted to do, worked their ass off, but took a lot of bumps and took a lot of punishment. And he thought that was part of it. But I think the best of all concerned is what they're doing now, which is eliminating the more dangerous moves. We haven't had as many neck injuries, but still with a much better in-ring product than you had when you had that hard ring that, you know, people didn't want to bump in.
All right, last one. Any idea who the mystery opponent is for the winner of the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix, or is there even one at this point?
I don't know what that's going to be. The deal was they promised Showtime that the winner between Josh Barnett and Daniel Cormier on Saturday night will have one more fight, one more big main event, and then they'll go to UFC. So who would that be? Because every other Strikeforce heavyweight has already moved over. I mean, Chad Griggs, you know, and not that he's a big name, but Verdum has. So Overeem obviously has. I mean, so who is there? I don't know. It would almost be like a throwaway. Like, who do you put against him? I'm at a loss. But, yeah, they're just supposed to do that.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up here for today. Got a lot of stuff up on the front page tomorrow. There'll be a new Figure Four, a new Observer out on Wednesday, new radio shows, tons of stuff. So check it all out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.